Chapter 9. Leaving Malden. A cool spring breeze tickled Perrin's face. Such a breeze should have carried with it the scents of pollen and crisp morning dew, of dirt overturned by sprouts pushing into the light, of new life and an earth reborn. This breeze carried with it only the scents of blood and death. Perrin turned his back to the breeze, knelt down and inspected the wagon's wheels. The vehicle was a sturdy construction of hickory, wood darkened with age. It appeared to be in good repair, but Perrin had learned to be careful when dealing with equipment from Malden. The Shido didn't scorn wagons and oxen as they did horses, but they, like all Aiel, believed in traveling light. They hadn't maintained the wagons or carts, and Perrin had found more than one hidden flaw during his inspection. "Next," he bellowed as he checked the first wheel's hub. The comment was directed at the crowd of people waiting to speak with him. "My lord," a voice said. It was deep and rough, like wood scraping against wood. Gerard Arganda, first captain of Gildon. His scent was of well-oiled armor.
"I must press the issue of our departure. Allow me to ride ahead with Her Majesty."
The Her Majesty he referred to was Aleandra, Queen of Gildon. Perrin continued working with the wheel. He wasn't as familiar with carpentry as he was with smithing, but his father had taught each of his sons to recognize signs of trouble in a wagon. Better to fix the problem before leaving than to be stranded halfway to the destination. Perrin ran his finger across the smooth brown hickory. The grain was clearly visible, and he tested for cracks with questing fingers, searching each point of stress. All four wheels looked good.
"My lord," Arganda asked.
"We all march together," Perrin said. "That's my order, Arganda. I won't have the refugees thinking that we're abandoning them."
Refugees. There were over 100,000 of those to care for. 100,000. Light that was far more than lived in the entire Two Rivers. And Perrin was in charge of feeding every one of them. Wagons. Many men didn't understand the importance of a good wagon. He lay down on his back, preparing to inspect the axles, and that gave him a view of the overcast sky, partially blocked by Malden's nearby city wall. The city was large for one this far north in Altara. It was almost more of a fortress than a city, with daunting walls and towers. Until the day before, the land around this city had been home to the Shido Aiel. But they were gone now. Many killed, others fled, their captives freed by an alliance between Perrin's forces and the Shomchan. The Shido had left him two things, a scent of blood on the air, and 100,000 refugees to care for. Though he was happy to give them their freedom, his goal in liberating Malden had been far different. The rescue of Fael. Another Aiel group had been advancing on his position, but they'd slowed, then camped, and were no longer rushing toward Malden. Perhaps they'd been warned by Shido fleeing the battle that they had a large army before them, one that had defeated the Shido despite their channelers. It seemed this new group behind Perrin had as little desire to engage him as he had to engage them. That gave him time. A little bit, at least. Arganda was still watching. The captain wore his polished breastplate and had his slotted helmet under his arm. The squat man wasn't a puffed-up fluff of an officer, but a common man who had risen through the ranks. He fought well and did as instructed. Usually.
"I'm not going to bend on this, Arganda," Perrin said, pulling himself along the damp ground beneath the wagon.
"Could we at least use gateways instead?" Arganda asked, kneeling down, graying hair shorn short, nearly brushing the ground as he peeked under the wagon. "The Ashaman are near dead from fatigue," Perrin snapped. "You know that. They're too tired for a large gateway," Arganda said. "But maybe they could send a small group. My lady is exhausted from her captivity. Surely you don't mean for her to march."
"The refugees are too tired," Perrin said. Alejandra can have a horse to ride, but she's leaving when the rest of us do. Light send that soon.
Arganda sighed, but nodded. He stood up as Perrin ran his fingers along the axle. He could tell stress in wood with a glance, but he preferred touch. Touch was more reliable. There was always a crack or a splintering where wood weakened, and you could feel it near to breaking. Wood was reliable like that. Unlike men. Unlike himself. He gritted his teeth. He didn't want to think about that. He had to keep working, had to keep doing something to distract himself. He liked to work. He'd been given far too few opportunities for it lately.
"Next," he said, voice echoing against the bottom of the wagon. "My lord, we should attack," a boisterous voice declared from beside the vehicle.
Perrin thumped his head back against the well-trampled grass, closing his eyes. Bertin Galen, Lord Captain of the Winged Guards, was to Mayenne what Arganda was to Gildon. Aside from that single similarity, the two captains were about as different as men could be. Perrin could see Bertin's large, beautifully worked boots with clasps shaped like hawks from beneath the wagon.
"My lord," Bertin continued, "a fine charge from the Winged Guard would scatter that Aiel rabble. Of this I'm certain. Why, we easily dealt with the Aiel here in the city."
"We had the Seanchan then," Perrin said, finishing with the rear axle and wriggling his way to the front to check the other one. He wore his old, stained coat. Fael would chastise him for that. He was supposed to present himself as a lord. But would she really expect him to wear a fine coat if he was going to spend an hour lying in the muddy grass looking at the bottoms of wagons? Fael wouldn't want him to be in the muddy grass in the first place. Perrin hesitated, hand on the front axle, thinking of her raven hair and distinctive Saldaean nose. She held the sum total of his love. She was everything to him. He had succeeded. He'd saved her. So why did he feel as if things were nearly as bad as they had been? He should rejoice. He should be ecstatic, should be relieved. He'd worried so much about her during her captivity. And yet now, with her safety secure, everything still felt wrong. Somehow. In ways he couldn't explain. Light. Would nothing just work as it was supposed to? He reached down for his pocket, wanting to finger the knotted cord he'd once carried there. But he'd thrown that away. "Stop it," he thought. "She's back. We can go back to the way it was before. Can't we?"
"Yes, well," Bertin continued. "I suppose the departure of the Seanchan could be a problem in an assault. But that Aiel group camped out there is smaller than what we already defeated. And if you are worried, you could send word to that Seanchan general and bring her back. Surely she would wish to fight alongside us again."
Perrin forced himself back to the moment. His own foolish problems were irrelevant. Right now, he needed to get these wagons moving. The front axle was good. He turned and pushed himself out from underneath the wagon. Bertin was of medium height, though the three plumes rising from his helmet made him look taller. He had on his red eye patch. Perrin didn't know where he'd lost the eye, and his armor gleamed. He seemed excited, as if he thought Perrin's silence meant they would attack. Perrin stood, dusting off his plain brown trousers.
"We're leaving," he said, then held up a hand to forbid further argument. "We defeated the septs here, but we had them dosed with fork root, and there were demoni on our side. We're tired, wounded, and we have Fael back. There's no further reason to fight. We run."
Bertin didn't look satisfied, but he nodded and turned away, stomping across the muddy ground toward where his men sat their mounts. Perrin looked at the small group of people who waited in a cluster around the wagon to speak with him. Once, this kind of business had frustrated Perrin. It seemed like pointless work, as many of the supplicants already knew what his answer would be. But they needed to hear those answers from him, and Perrin had come to understand the importance of that. Besides, their questions helped distract him from the strange tension he felt at having rescued Fael. He walked toward the next wagon in line,
his small entourage following him. There were a good 50 of the wagons set in a long caravan train. The first ones were loaded with salvage from Malden. The middle ones were in the process of being treated likewise, and he had only 2 left to inspect. He had wanted to be well out of Malden before sunset. That would probably carry him far enough away to be safe. Unless these new Shido decided to give chase in revenge. With the number of people Perrin had to move, a blind man would be able to track them. The sun drooped toward the horizon, a shining spot behind the cloud cover. Light, but this was a mess, with the chaos of organizing refugees and separate army camps. Getting away was supposed to be the easy part. The Shido camp was a disaster. His people had scavenged and packed many of the abandoned tents. Now cleared, the ground around the city was trampled weeds and mud, littered with refuse. The Shido, being Aiel, had preferred to camp outside the city walls, rather than within them. They were a strange people, no denying that. Who would spurn a nice bed, not to mention a better military position, to stay outside in tents? Aiel despised cities, though. Most of the buildings had either been burned during the initial Shido assault, or looted for riches. Doors beaten down, windows shattered, possessions abandoned on the streets and trampled by Gashine running back and forth to fetch water. People still scurried about like insects, moving through the city gates and around the former Shido camp, grabbing what they could to stow it for transport. They'd have to leave the wagons behind once they decided to travel. Grady couldn't make a gateway big enough to pass a wagon through. But for now, the vehicles would be a big help. There were also a good number of oxen. Someone else was inspecting those, making certain they were fit to pull the wagons. The Shido had let many of the city's horses run off. A shame, that. But you made use of what you had. Perrin reached the next wagon, beginning his inspection with the vehicle's long tongue, to which oxen would be harnessed.
"My lord," said a scratchy voice, "I believe that I am next."
Perrin glanced over at the speaker. Sebin Bolwer, his secretary. The man had a dry, pinched face and a perpetual stoop that made him look almost like a roosting vulture. Though his coat and breeches were clean, it seemed to Perrin that they should shed puffs of dust each time Bolwer stepped. He smelled musty, like an old book. "Bolwer," Perrin said, running his fingers over the tongue, then checking the harness straps. "I thought you were speaking with the captives."
"I have indeed been busy with my work there," Bolwer said. "However, I grew curious. Did you have to let the Shon Chan take all of the captive Shido channelers with them?"
Perrin glanced at the musty secretary. The wise ones who could channel had been knocked unconscious by Forkroot. They'd been given over to the Shon Chan while still unconscious, to do with as they pleased. The decision had not made Perrin popular with the Aiel among his allies, but he would not have those channelers running about to take revenge on him.
"I don't see why I would want them," he said to Bolwer.
"Well, my lord, there is much of great interest to learn. For instance, it appears that many of the Shido are ashamed of their clan's behavior. The wise ones themselves were at odds. Also, they have had dealings with some very curious individuals who offered them objects of power from the Age of Legends. Whoever they were, they could make gateways."
"Forsaken," Perrin said with a shrug, stooping down on one knee to check the right front wheel.
"I doubt we'll figure out which ones. Probably had a disguise on."
From the corner of his eyes, he saw Bolwer purse his lips at that comment.
"You disagree?" Perrin asked.
"No, my lord," he said. "The objects the Shido were given are very suspect, by my estimation. The Aiel were duped, though for what reason I cannot yet fathom. However, if we had more time to search the city..."
Light. Was every person in the camp going to ask him for something they knew they couldn't have?
He got down on the ground to check the back of the wheel hub. Something about it bothered him.
We already know that the Forsaken oppose us, Bulwer. They won't rightly welcome Rand in with open arms to seal them away again, or whatever it is he's going to do.
Blasted colors showing Rand in his mind's eye. He pushed those away again. They appeared whenever he thought of Rand or Matt, bringing visions of them.
Anyway, Perrin continued, I don't see what you need me to do. We'll take the Shido Gaishine with us. The maidens captured their fair share. You can interrogate them. But we're leaving this place.
Yes, my lord, Bulwer said. It's just a shame we lost those wise ones. My experience has been that they are those among the Aiel with the most understanding.
The Seanchan wanted them, Perrin said, so they got them. I wouldn't let Adara bully me on the point, and what is done is done. What do you expect of me, Bulwer?
Perhaps a message could be sent, Bulwer said, to ask some questions of the wise ones when they awake. I...
He stopped, then stooped down to glance at Perrin.
My lord, this is rather distracting. Couldn't we find someone else to inspect the wagons?
Everyone else is either too tired or too busy, Perrin said. I want most of the refugees waiting in the camps to move when we give the marching order. And most of our soldiers are scavenging the city for supplies. Each handful of grain they find will be needed. Half the stuff's spoiled anyway. I can't help with that work since I need to be where people can find me.
He'd accepted that, cross though it made him.
Yes, my lord, Bulwer said. But surely you can be somewhere accessible without crawling under wagons.
It's work I can do while people talk to me, Perrin said. You don't need my hands, just my tongue. And that tongue is telling you to forget the Aiel.
But...
There is nothing more I can do, Bulwer, Perrin said firmly, glancing up at him through the spokes of the wheel. We're heading north. I'm done with the Shido. They can burn for all I care.
Bulwer pursed his thin lips again, and he smelled just slightly of annoyance.
Of course, my lord, he said, giving a quick bow.
Then he withdrew. Perrin squirmed out and stood up, nodding to a young woman who stood in a dirty dress and worn shoes at the side of the line of wagons.
Go fetch Lincoln, he said. Tell him to have a look at this wheel hub. I think the bearing's been stripped, and the blasted thing looks ready to roll right off.
The young woman nodded, running away. Lincoln was a master carpenter who had been unfortunate enough to be visiting relatives in Kyrian when the Shido attacked. He'd had the will beaten nearly out of him. Perhaps he should have been the one to inspect the wagons, but with that haunted look in his eyes, Perrin wasn't sure how far he trusted the man to do a proper inspection. He seemed good enough at fixing problems when they were pointed out to him, though. And the truth was, as long as Perrin kept moving, he felt he was doing something, making progress, not thinking about other issues. Wagons were easy to fix. They weren't like people. Not at all. Perrin turned, glancing across the empty camp, pocked with fire pits and discarded rags. Fail was walking back toward the city. She'd been organizing some of her followers to scout the area. She was striking, beautiful. That beauty wasn't just in her face or her lean figure. It was in how easily she commanded people, how quickly she always knew what to do. She was clever in a way Perrin never had been. He wasn't stupid, he just liked to think about things. But he'd never been good with people. Not like Matt or Rand. Fail had shown him that he didn't need to be good with people, or even with women, as long as he could make one person understand him. He didn't have to be good at talking to anyone else, as long as he could talk to her. But now he couldn't find the words to say. He worried about what had happened to her during her captivity, but the possibilities didn't bother him. They made him angry, but none of what had happened was her fault. You did what you had to survive. He respected her for her strength.
Light, he thought. I'm thinking again. Need to keep working.
Next, he bellowed, stooping down to continue his inspection of the wagon.
If I'd seen your face and nothing else, lad, a hearty voice said, I'd assume that we'd lost this battle.
Perrin turned with surprise. He hadn't realized that Tam El-Thor was one of those waiting to speak with him. That crowd had thinned, but there were still some messengers and attendants. At the back, the blocky, solid sheepherder leaned on his quarterstaff as he waited. His hair had all gone to silver. Perrin could remember a time when it had been a deep black. Back when Perrin had just been a boy, before he'd known a hammer or a forge. Perrin's fingers reached down, touching the hammer at his waist. He'd chosen it over the axe. It had been the right decision, but he'd still lost control of himself in the Battle of Molden. Was that what bothered him? Or was it how much he'd enjoyed the killing?
What do you need, Tam? He asked. I'm only bringing a report, my lord, Tam said. The Two Rivers men are organized for the march, each man with 2 tents on his back just in case. We couldn't use water from the city on account of the fork route, so I sent some lads to the aqueduct to fill some barrels there. We could use a wagon to bring them back. Done, Perrin said, smiling.
Finally, someone who did things that were needed without having to ask first.
Tell the Two Rivers men that I intend to have them back home as soon as possible. The moment Grady and Niald are strong enough to make a gateway. That could be a while, though. That's appreciated, my lord, Tam said.
It felt so strange for him to use a title.
Can I speak to you alone for a moment, though?
Perrin nodded, noticing that Lincoln was coming, his limp was distinctive, to look at the wagon. Perrin moved with Tam away from the group of attendants and guards, walking into the shadow of Molden's wall. Moss grew green against the base of the massive blocks making up the fortification. It was strange that the moss was far brighter than the trampled, muddied weeds under their feet. Nothing but moss seemed green this spring.
What is it, Tam?
Perrin asked as soon as they were far enough away. Tam rubbed his face. There was gray stubble coming in. Perrin had pushed his men hard these last few days, and there hadn't been time for shaving. Tam wore a simple blue wool coat, and the thick cloth was probably a welcome shield against the mountain breeze.
The lads are wondering, Perrin, Tam said, a little less formal now that they were alone. Did you mean what you said about giving up on Manetherin?
Aye, Perrin said. That banner has been nothing but trouble since it first came out. The Shan Chan and everyone else might as well know. I'm no king.
You have a queen who sworn you as her liege.
He considered Tam's words, working out the best response. Once that kind of behavior had made people think he was slow of thought, now people assumed his thoughtfulness meant that Perrin was crafty and keen-minded. What a difference a few fancy words in front of your name made.
I think you're right in what you did, Tam said surprisingly. Calling the Two Rivers Manetherin would not only have antagonized the Shan Chan, but the Queen of Andor herself. It would imply that you meant to hold more than just the Two Rivers, that perhaps you wanted to conquer all that Manetherin once held.
Perrin shook his head.
I don't mean to conquer anything, Tam. Light. I don't mean to hold what people say I've got. The sooner that Elaine takes her throne and sends a proper lord out to the Two Rivers, the better. We can be done with all of this Lord Perrin business and things can go back to normal.
And Queen Aleandra?
Tam asked.
She can swear to Elaine instead, Perrin said stubbornly. Or maybe directly to Rand. He seems to like scooping up kingdoms, like a child playing a game of wobbles.
Tam smelled concerned, troubled. Perrin looked away. Things should be simpler. They should be.
What? I just thought you were over this, Tam said. Nothing has changed from the days before Fael was taken, Perrin said. I still don't like that wolfhead banner either. I think maybe it's time to take that one down too.
The men believe in that banner, Perrin, lad, Tam said quietly. He had a soft way about him, but that made you listen when he spoke. Of course, he also usually spoke sense.
I pulled you aside because I wanted to warn you. If you provide a chance for the lads to return to the Two Rivers, some will go, but not many. I've heard most swear that they'll follow you to Sheol Ghul. They know the last battle is coming. Who couldn't know that, with all of the signs lately? They don't intend to be left behind. He hesitated.
And neither do I reckon.
He smelled of determination.
We'll see, Perrin said, frowning. We'll see.
He sent Tam off with orders to requisition a wagon and take it for those water barrels. The soldiers would listen. Tam was Perrin's first captain, though that seemed backward to Perrin. He didn't know much of the man's past, but Tam had fought in the Aiel War long ago. He'd held a sword before Perrin had been born. And now he followed Perrin's orders. They all did. And they wanted to keep doing so. Hadn't they learned? He rested back against the wall, not walking back to his attendants, standing in the shadow. Now that he seized upon it, he realized that was a part of what was bothering him. Not the whole of it, but some, tied in with what was troubling him. Even now that Fael had returned. He hadn't been a good leader lately. He'd never been a model one, of course, not even when Fael had been there to guide him. But during her absence, he'd been worse, far worse. He'd ignored his orders from Rand, ignored everything, all to get her back. But what else was a man supposed to do? His wife had been kidnapped. He'd saved her, but in doing so, he'd abandoned everyone else. And because of him, men were dead, good men, men who had trusted in him. Standing in that shadow, he remembered a moment, only a day past, when an ally had fallen to Aiel arrows, his heart poisoned by Massima. Aram had been a friend, one that Perrin had discarded in his quest to save Fael. Aram had deserved better.
I should never have let that tinker pick up a sword, he thought.
But he didn't want to deal with this problem right now. He couldn't. There was too much to do. He moved away from the wall, planning to inspect the last wagon in line.
Next,
he barked as he began again. Aravine Carnell stepped forward. The Amadisian woman no longer wore her Gaishine robes. Instead, she had on a simple light green dress, not clean, that had been pulled out of the salvage. She was plump, but her face still bore a haggard cast from her days as a captive. There was a determination about her. She was surprisingly good at organization, and Perrin suspected she was of noble heritage. She had the scent of it about her, self-confidence, an ease giving commands. It was a wonder those things had survived her captivity. As he knelt down to look at the first wheel, he figured it was odd that Fael had chosen Aravine to supervise the refugees. Why not one of the youths from Chafail? Those dandies could be annoying, but they'd shown a surprising measure of competence.
My lord, Aravine said, her practiced curtsy another indication of her background. I have finished organizing the people for departure.
So soon? Perrin asked, looking up from the wheel.
It was not so difficult as we expected, my lord. I commanded them to gather by nationality, then by town of birth. Not surprisingly, the Kyrianin formed the largest bulk of them, followed by Altarans, then Amadisians, with some smattering of others. A few Domani, some Terrabanners, the occasional Borderlander or Tyran.
How many can stand a day or two of marching without a ride in the wagons?
Most of them, my lord, she said. The sick and elderly were expelled from the city when the Shido took it. The people here are accustomed to being worked hard. They're exhausted, lord, but none too eager to be waiting here with those other Shido camped not half a day's march away.
All right, Perrin said.
Start them marching immediately.
Immediately?
Aravine asked with surprise. He nodded. I want them on that road marching northward as soon as you can get them going. I'll send Aleandra and her guard to lead the way. That ought to keep Arganda from complaining, and it would get the refugees out of the way. The maidens would be far better and far more efficient at gathering supplies alone. The scavenging was nearly finished anyway. His people would have to survive on the road for only a few weeks. After that, they could jump via Gateway to some place more secure. Andor, perhaps, or Kyrian. Those Shido behind him had him anxious. They could decide to attack at any time. Better to get away and remove the temptation. Aravine curtsied and hurried away to make preparations, and Perrin thanked the light for someone else who didn't see a need to question or second-guess him. He sent a boy to inform Arganda of the impending march, then finished his inspection of the wagon. After that, he stood up, wiping his hands on his trousers.
Next, he said.
Nobody stepped forward. The only people remaining around him were guards, messenger boys, and a few wagoneers waiting to hitch up their oxen and move the wagons off for loading. The maidens had made a large pile of foodstuffs and supplies in the middle of the former camp, and Perrin could make out Fael there working to organize it. Perrin sent the ring of attendants with him over to help her, then found himself alone, with nothing to do. Just what he'd wanted to avoid. The wind blew past again, carrying that awful stench of death. It also carried memories. The fury of the battle, the passion and thrill of each swing. Aiel were excellent warriors, the best the land knew. Each exchange had been close, and Perrin had earned his share of cuts and bruises, though those had since been healed. Fighting the Aiel had made him feel alive. Each one he'd slain had been an expert with the spears. Each one could have killed him. But he'd won. During those moments of fighting, he'd felt a driving passion. The passion of finally doing something. After 2 months of waiting, each blow had meant a step closer to finding Fael. No more talking, no more planning. He'd found purpose. And now it was gone. He felt hollow. It was like the time when his father had promised him something special as a gift for winter night. Perrin had waited months, eager, doing his chores to earn the unknown gift. When he'd finally received the small wooden horse, he'd been excited for a moment. But the next day, he'd been shockingly melancholy. Not because of the gift, but because there had no longer been anything to strive for. The excitement was gone, and only then had he realized how much more precious he'd found that anticipation than the gift itself. Soon after that, he'd begun visiting Master Luhan's forge, eventually becoming his apprentice. He was glad to have Fael back. He rejoiced. And yet now, what was there for him? These blasted men saw him as their leader. Some even thought of him as their king. He'd never asked for that. He'd had them put away the banners every time they put them out, up until Fael had persuaded him that using them would be an advantage. He still didn't believe that the Wolfhead banner belonged there, flapping insolently above his camp. But could he take it down? The men did look to it. He could smell pride on them every time they passed it. He couldn't turn them away. Rand would need their aid. He'd need everyone's aid at the last battle. The last battle. Could a man like him, a man who didn't want to be in charge, lead these forces to the most important moment in their lives? The colors swirled, showing him Rand sitting in what appeared to be a stone Tyran home. Perrin's old friend had a dark cast to his expression, like a man troubled by weighty thoughts. Even sitting like that, Rand looked regal. He was what a king was supposed to be, with that rich red coat, that noble bearing. Perrin was just a blacksmith. He sighed, shaking his head and dispelling the image. He needed to seek out Rand. He could feel something tugging at him, pulling him. Rand needed him. That had to be his focus now.